Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Que quiere marcharse de Semedo. Semedo de momento está enchufado. Ahora justo lo digo y justo se pierde. Ay, a punto ha estado de cometer penalti. Gol de Nicolás Pepe.
Is Arsecast Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnar Blog. James, it's not goodly morning or goodly afternoon. It's goodly evening. It could be goodly night. We've had some issues, but we're here, and goodly end of season to you.
Goodly end of season to you too. I'm so pleased it's over. goodly evening's quite nice. We could sort of abbreviate that to just goodly evening. You know what I mean?
Goodly evening.
Otherwise, we're repeating an unnecessary E sound. Goodly. Just roll them together. Goodly. Exactly. Goodly evening.
Goodly evening. could sound sinister, that, I think. How's it all going?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I just had my first COVID vaccination this evening at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. Queued up, all moved pretty quickly, all very smooth. Got a jab in the arm. Had to wait around for a few minutes to see if I felt weird or had a reaction to it. But I'm completely purple toadstool extreme stairlift. So there's no.
And can you actually see the microchip go in?
Can feel it. No, listen, we shouldn't. I'm genuinely I am delighted to have had the vaccine. 4 weeks now until the second dose and get the full immunity from this thing. And I feel very lucky and privileged to have been able to get it. I know that many people are still waiting and anxious to get it. So I hope that, you know, wherever you are, you do get yours as soon as possible. So, yeah.
Mine's tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah. I got the Pfizer one. I don't know which one you're getting.
Ooh, I think that's the best one. That's my favourite. That's the one I'm hoping for.
Yeah?
But as far as I understand it, we're running out of it in this country.
Right.
We haven't got loads of it left. But listen, they're all good. They're doing amazing work. And I got the text on Thursday or Friday last week saying, you know, we've got to your age, effectively. And I managed to book one for Tuesday.
That's
I'm
great.
Very excited. And I don't even like needles.
No, look, you don't feel anything. You really don't. You don't feel a thing. And look, I have to say as well that like the place this evening was staffed by volunteers who are doing an amazing thing and giving up their time for the benefit of the wider community. And I'm sure that's the same all over the world where these things and when vaccines are being rolled out. So thank you to all of those people for what they're doing. So Monday evening, the season is gone. It's over. I mean, how do you feel about the season being over? Do you feel like
it's so nice? It's so nice.
Or do you feel a little bit more something else about it? Did you watch that interview? That's
your... It's so nice. It's so nice.
I haven't seen that. What is it?
That is Pep Guardiola.
Oh, talking about Aguero.
Tears, talking about Sergio Aguero, and the guy he says to him, is it just on a human level that you like him? And he stands there and he's sort of crying and he says, it's so nice. He's so nice.
It's so nice. It's so nice.
It's just an amazing interview. I heartily recommend you.
Taking his I'm very happy shtick to the next level there.
So happy, you guys.
So nice.
Happy. So nice.
Wow, emotive stuff. How do I feel, Andrew? season's ending at just the wrong time. We only need a few more months of this. The league would be ours.
Man, it is. It is something that does bring about a tinge of regret, isn't it? Like, we've put together this run at the end of the season, and people will say, ah, the pressure's off and blah, blah, blah. And look, maybe there's part of it, but I don't know. We just kind of found our shit a bit towards the end of the season. Pity we couldn't do it for Villarreal, of course, but there you go. Look, you can't help but look at the league table and see us finish on 61 points. What were we, 2 points or 1 point off the... where was the Europa League? No, we were a couple of points off the Europa. But, like, you can't help but look at the points that we dropped this season, the stupid points, the red card points, the Burnley points, the Fulham points, the Everton points, the Southampton points, those points, pointy points that we could have had and should have had. So yeah. I have to say, I feel slightly confused by how I feel. In some ways, I feel like, well, we've done all right, and I know people hate the second half of the season thing, and it's right. It's the season is 38 games. But I do see some signs of positivity, and then, of course, you're reminded of those dark, dismal, disheartening months of November and December. And
it was bad.
It was really bad, and it's fucked us, you know, in a way. And you can't ignore that. You can't just wipe that off the slate and say, well, if that didn't happen, we'd have been great. It did happen.
Yeah.
So
if we do the league table just on the last five games, we're champions. it is really galling to look at the table and think it is just 6 points, you know, to where we wanted to be. And you think of so many matches where we unnecessarily drop points. I mean, losing at home to Burnley, you know, things like that. Just... so unnecessary. But I mean, maybe we should have stopped podcasting around December, you know, because the writing was on the wall. We had done it to ourselves. I think we had put ourselves with that dismal run in such a position that it was basically impossible to rescue our season at that point.
Yeah.
And in fairness, I think there was pretty much consensus about that among Arsenal fans at the time. I think we all knew, well, we've blown our season with that run. And in fact, the fact that we've gone on such a good run subsequently and still missed out on our goals just underlines that point, really, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
But it was a confusing day, too, because, you know, 1 minute we were going to be seventh and above Tottenham and in the, you know, Europa Conference.
I would have liked that. I would have liked to finish above Tottenham.
Same. 5 years, Andrew.
That's crazy, isn't it? Imagine saying that like 5 years ago, that we'd finish behind them every year for 5 years.
And also, like, think about the last 5 years. It doesn't even feel like Tottenham have been very good in that time. Not especially.
I mean, they were quite good under Pochettino. You have to say that he did a good job there. I mean, let's make it very clear that they still have not won anything. Despite this period of so-called power shift or whatever they want to fucking call it, they still haven't won anything. But I do know what you mean. But I also think that they have been able to not be that good because we also have not been that good.
Well, that's exactly what I mean. How not good must we have been? And it's a long time, 5 years. It hasn't felt like 5 years. And I think that's down to quite a hefty dose of denial on my part, basically just ignoring that fact. I was really, really annoyed with Leicester City, I must admit.
What they have... I mean, I put out a tweet on Sunday evening to say that the way they bottled the Champions League qualification... in the last 2 years has been incredible. And I got a lot of pushback for it. And I think probably maybe the word bottle is a little harsh, but apparently they spent 92% of this season in the top four.
I think it was all but about four games.
Yeah,
something
I mean,
like
it
that.
It is absolutely crazy what they've done. And I know they've had injuries and they've won the cup and fair play. You know, and we talked about the way Leicester... You know, there were things that we could learn from Leicester. That's one thing that we have to make sure we definitely do not learn from Leicester. It was quite funny. I have to share some of the blame here. My brother texted me a happy St. Totteringham's Day WhatsApp, and I went, well, hang on. Hang on, they're losing 2-1, and then all of a sudden it went 3-2. And then he said that this Leicester-style collapse is known in his Liverpool WhatsApp group as the brogening.
Yeah, so. I mean, it is uncanny. They've done it, I think, twice now, haven't they, under him? And yes, they had some big injuries. I mean, Harvey Barnes and James Justin are the really big ones who have been long absentees. Vardy missed a spell as well.
Madison was out for a bit as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, but even so, it is kind of incredible. And sort of the way they did it, you know, Kasper Schmeichel scored an own goal. And
That Tottenham team, they don't even have a manager. And Harry Kane has just said he wants to leave.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. He did play like a man possessed from what I could see. Hopefully that was his farewell. But yeah, I was annoyed. It's funny, isn't it? You know, the Conference League I could take or leave, but I really did care about finishing above Spurs. Mm. I can't disguise that. So
yeah, the only way it could have happened, you know, finishing above Spurs was if Everton had beaten Man City, and Man City
that didn't go so well
for
us.
No, it didn't. It really didn't. They were 2-0 down about 15 minutes in. You're like, oh Christ, you know. So that's not going to happen. Yeah, look, I'm not going to cry any tears. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I care that we're out of the UEFA Conference League. I'm not. I think I made it pretty clear. I had some objections to that. I know not everybody shared that point of view. It's just how I feel about it. But it was a shame that we couldn't finish above Tottenham. And yeah, there you go. It's something to put right next season, that's for sure.
Big time. Can't, you know, 5 years.
Yeah, it's too long. That's it. That's enough now. Arsenal, if you're listening, that's enough. We've had enough. The line has been drawn in the sand. Sort it out next season, along with many, many other things that you've got to sort out. Fans were back, James, and
yeah,
it was great. It was really great to hear and see fans back in the stadium. There were moments where I felt actually a little bit emotional watching the game. And this was, you know, let's face it, essentially a meaningless game in the context of our season, finishing seventh or finishing eighth, Conference League or not Conference League. It's like, you want a shit sandwich or not a shit sandwich? Okay. But, you know, to hear goals being celebrated, to listen once again to an opposition substitute being announced, and to hear the who? From the fans.
Yeah.
Love it.
Absolutely. The cries of shoot. Were you here, pleased to hear them again?
That was brilliant. Who was it? Odegaard. I think it might have been Martin Odegaard early in the first half, early in the first half. It fell to him and it was like, shoot. And it was like, oh, fuck, I better do what they say. I should not have shot. It didn't really do anything. I think he just cracked it into a defender who was a couple of yards away from him. But that, even that, was lovely, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, yeah, it felt like anyone who got the ball within the last sort of 30 yards was getting that. But it was great. I wasn't there. Amy Lawrence was there. And I hope she won't mind me saying, I spoke to her on the phone earlier. She said it was really emotional, you know, when the team came out and they got their ovation. And I loved everything. I loved just, you know, even a good pass being appreciated by fans, that sound, or a good tackle being met with a round of applause. It just adds sort of dynamics to a game. It's the accompaniment that is so badly missed. And one thing I thought was really interesting as well, and I guess this is, you know, for people who always watch on the TV, it makes a massive difference to the TV product, you know, like to the TV experience.
Of course.
It feels like so, I think we've become so kind of inured to the kind of fake crowd noise.
No, I never used the fake crowd noise. So football for me for the last 12 months or so, or however long it's been, has been this really sterile thing, you know, without...
Well, both have their evils, I think, you know? Neither was a perfect solution.
I agree. But even the Palace game the other night was brilliant as well. Like, it was, again, it's not like the most exciting performance of the season. I know we won the game, but even stuff like Kieran Tierney becoming the pantomime villain because he got kicked. I love it. You miss that so much, and
it's a whole other layer. I have to say, I really enjoyed as well about the Palace game, obviously it was just home fans. Mm. And so I loved it when the away team scored and you properly silence a stadium. Obviously, it's great when you have the roar of the away fans, but it kind of reminded me of kind of, you know, the Nou Camp or something like that, when the away team score and it's just complete dead silence.
Apart from, like, you just hear, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Slightly in the background.
but it was great to... see the fans there, see the fans before the game. You know, there was the protest as well, which looked to be pretty well attended despite some pretty dismal weather. And then once the match started, really behind the team. And it's a sort of weird thing in a way. It was the last game of the season, but it kind of felt like the first too, because like it felt proper. In some way.
Exactly. It felt like, it felt real. And I think we've said this plenty of times on the podcast that there has been this feeling of surrealness and like sterile, where it's like none of the good moments feel as good as they should. And the bad moments feel worse because they're happening in this kind of this vacuum of artificial whatever, this sort of facsimile of football that we've had to get used to for obvious reasons, you know, but to see and hear and experience what a real football match, well, something akin to it. There was only 10,000 people there, but 10,000 people make a lot of difference. It was really great. I enjoyed the final day of the season in its own little bubble, if you like, because of simply the return of fans.
Yeah. Yeah. Any thoughts about the starting lineup in particular?
No. I think it was one which maybe had an eye on next season in a way.
Yeah, I definitely think. I think the last few games.
Smith Rowe.
Yeah.
You know, I know Saka didn't start, but he started a lot and he came off the bench. You know, there was no Lacazette. He got a few minutes at the end.
I find that one quite telling. You know, it feels like his minutes have sort of disappeared, really. And it's not like he did anything to necessarily warrant it. And it's frankly not really like Aubameyang's done much to warrant that either. But hopefully it's kind of a strategic thing because they're looking at the situation and thinking, well, Oba's definitely going to be here next year and he's the guy we need to make this work with.
Yeah. You know, so there was no Ceballos, for example, no Willian in the squad, apparently, because he had, I don't know what. No David Luiz, obviously, who's leaving.
Bellerin injured,
which, you know, I think is a bit of a shame as well. But, you know, Chambers at right back and Tierney, and then you've got Odegaard, and I think there was something quite telling about his selection as well. You know, when Arteta said afterwards, we've got a very clear idea of what we want to do when it comes to Martin Odegaard. I think there's only one thing you can read into that, isn't there?
I don't think you'd be saying that if it was, we want to get rid of him. Do you know what I mean? We're very, very clear. We do not like this player. I mean, he looked super motivated from the first minute.
Yeah, I agree.
Odegaard, I thought.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, you can interpret that in different ways. I was kind of thinking, is that because he thinks I might not be back here, I want to leave a good impression, or is it because he wants to convince the club to push the boat out and get that deal done? But it was really good to see him play kind of in the fashion that he did before the injury picks up on international duty.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, people can talk about, and probably will talk about the numbers or the end product, but he really does work hard when he's properly fit, and I think he was as close to fully fit as we've seen him in the last few weeks. He really does work hard. He presses high, he leads that press, and I really think he's a player that if he can bring him in on a permanent basis, Mikel Arteta will use heavily next season, because I think he likes the technical quality that he has, but I think he really also likes the character and the way that Odegaard tries to play the game. I think he's obviously fitted in really well, slotted in on loan, had a big impact. I know there was that lull in the middle, but I think if there is a chance of bringing him in, it's something that will be pretty high on Arteta's priority list.
It's not often in football you get the chance to try before you buy. You know, and I think we've seen enough from Odegaard. Buying a player is such a huge risk. If you think about, let's say, the alternative David Ornstein reported today is Emi Buendia, and I know Charles Watts put it on that last week as well, someone they're interested in. He's a good player, but we don't know what he'll do in an Arsenal shirt. There is always that kind of chaos factor of how does a player fit into the team, fit into the group, fit into the city, all these things that affect performance. You know, it's a risk. It's always a risk. And I think personally that we've seen enough from Odegaard that this feels like less of a risk. You know, we've seen that he can play very well in this team.
Mm.
We'd like to see it with more consistency, perhaps, and maybe, you know, more fitness with no injury problems. But I just think it's rare that you get that opportunity to take a look at a player, put them in your team, see how they combine with other people, see how they fit the system, and then think, should we spend the money? I think we're in a privileged position if that's the position we're in.
Yeah.
But a lot's in Real Madrid's hands, right?
Of course, of course. You know, what sort of money they might want for him, I don't know. I mean, would he be any less or more expensive than Buendia, for example, Norwich coming up from the Championship?
I don't think so.
I mean, he's got a contract till 2024 with Norwich, so they have a very, very strong hand. He's had a great season, hasn't he, at Championship level. I think he's 16 goals and 14 assists or something in those regions, you know, 15 and 15, yeah, more or less. I mean, really good numbers, but also in the Championship. I'm always slightly dubious about that kind of thing. You know, players who do it really effectively at a level which is kind of below where you want them to be, like Kesman scoring a bazillion goals in the Eredivisie, for example, you know?
Yeah, I think Buendia, he did okay when he was in the Premier League last time. I think he's a more developed player now. I think he's a better player now. I think you would be looking at least 40 million quid, to be honest with you.
Yeah, because,
I mean, and if you think Aston Villa are one of the clubs interested, you know, they went and bought Ollie Watkins from Brentford who in the Championship, and I think that was about... There was over 30 million quid, as far as I remember.
Mm.
You'd be talking in that ballpark again for Buendia. I think Wade probably would be cheaper than Odegaard. Maybe he's on the salary. I imagine he's on sort of okay money at Madrid. But it just depends on if they want to keep him. I think one of the other cases to keep him is one of the discussions that's happening around the Arsenal squad at the moment is, are we losing leadership figures?
Mm.
And you talk about his mentality. I mean, he's an international captain, right? He's the captain of Norway.
That's right, yeah.
And he does seem like someone who could take on that mantle a little bit. You know, he could share in that, be part of that leadership group within the squad. I'm in favour. I know not everybody is, but I think he is a quality player.
Yeah.
And we'd be fortunate if we can get him.
I would do it too, I have to say. I would, if we could. I'd like us to sign him on a permanent basis. He's only 22, got loads of developing still to do. I think you can see the quality in his passing. Some of his passing yesterday against Brighton was excellent. You know, there are a couple of really good through balls, incisive balls to Aubameyang. He was involved in the second goal for Pepe. He works hard. He does his defensive shift. Yeah, I think he's got all the attributes that we're looking for.
Do you think he's a problem? Some people I've seen online saying, you know, it's sidelined Smith Rowe, it pushes Smith Rowe wide. Do you see it like that?
It's a good question, I guess. It depends on what you think you can realistically get from Smith Rowe next season, because I, you know, I'll put my cards on the table there as well. I love him. I love watching him. I think he's going to be a huge player for us. The talent is incredible. Then you start to have conversations about, well, how much can you or should you rely on a 20-year-old? How much can you and should you place physically on a 20-year-old? Like, if we all want to see Smith Rowe play every game of next season, are we then not culpable if he you know, experiences some fitness issues or injury issues or you know, gets overplayed or whatever it is. I think we have to think about how we build a squad, not necessarily just for next season, but the aim has to be next season, because we don't have Europe, we've got all the time to work in the Premier League to, you know, put out a team that isn't fatigued, that isn't doing going here, there and everywhere, traveling, etc., etc. But the aim then is to get back into Europe and to have players who can, you know, play across a busier season. So I don't worry that much, because I do think there's room for both of them in the team, as we've seen at times this season. You know, they've both played and both been good for us. So,
yeah. You're making a point there about the European thing, because it's tempting to think no European football. You know, how many players do we need? And there's a degree of truth to that. But if Edu's doing his job correctly, he's thinking in terms of 5 years and hopefully in that period of time, us getting back into that level of competition. So we need to try and keep these people around. I think if you think about those three positions behind Aubameyang or whoever it might be, you know, you've got Saka, Pepe, Odegaard. Saka, Pepe, Odegaard, Smith Rowe.
Martinelli.
That's five, is it? You know, that's a nice sort of mix to be competing for those roles. And there's a few who can do a few different jobs. I mean, Smith Rowe, I think, can play in any of those positions. Saka probably can play in any two.
I think there's probably, when they sit down and think about their squad for next season, it is going to have to be smaller, no question, because we don't have Europe. It doesn't need to be quite as big.
We can't carry as much. No,
exactly. But I do wonder if you know, if you have players like Martinelli can play left or he can play striker. Saka can play fucking everywhere, it seems. Smith Rowe can play on the right. He can play as a 10. He can play on the left. You could probably play him in a midfield three if you're playing a 4-3-3 as one of the eights, maybe. You know, if you let's say sit party and you've got two players ahead, he could easily play in there, I think.
He almost played there at times, I thought, in this game. Yeah. You know, he dropped in and allowed Tierney to overlap. You've got really good combination players who are flexible, who can do different jobs within that system. Basically, the long and the short of it is, I hope we can do Odegaard. I'd love to see that deal get done.
Me too. I think it would be kind of a statement signing as well in a summer where, you know, look, our stock has fallen and we're not in Europe and the season has been poor. And, you know, if you see encouraging signs of the last 4 or 5 months, great. If you don't see encouraging signs, then maybe a signing like Odegaard is some kind of statement of intent from the club about how they're going to get back to where we want to get to. Because I do think the quality is there in this player.
A player coming from Real Madrid to play for a team who aren't in Europe would certainly be a statement.
Yeah, I mean, he will have had to have been sold on the project or convinced by the project, and maybe that in itself is an encouraging sign. Nicolas Pepe, two more goals. Mm. I mean, he's playing so well and ending this season so strongly. It's going to be mad to think who we sign to play ahead of him next season, isn't it? Keith Gillespie.
We've been here before, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, Keith Gillespie, Stuart Ripley. I've heard quite a lot of whispers about Stuart Ripley.
Andre Kanchelskis.
I'm just trying to think. Actually, Steve Stone. There was a lot of talk about Steve Stone. Very dynamic right winger.
Man, look, surely now the lesson is, we've got to give this guy, because like he's such an odd player. He's such an odd player.
Yeah, because, I don't know if you had the same commentator as me, but they were slating him for, you know, sloppy touches.
There were. I mean, there are moments where he does that thing where he kind of has the ball and he kind of leans one way and he's trying
to... He's a disaster on a short corner. You give him the ball and he's like, you know, he steps over it and doesn't know where he's going.
But the goals, I mean, just... The quality is there, and you look at his numbers in the Premier League this season. He's 10 goals in the Premier League, and he's only started, what, 16 games?
Yeah, 16 goals, all competitions.
16 goals, all competitions, a number of assists as well. So, You know,
and that's and this is not to be. I mean, I'm delighted with that, but that is what we should be getting.
Oh yeah,
from
yeah,
him, really.
From a £72 million player, and it's not to put the price tag on him, but you know.
Yeah, I remember when he arrived. We had a conversation, and someone asked us like, "How many goals is he going to score?" And I think I said I'd be looking for 15 in his first season, and that was ultimately, you know, a little bit too much. I mean, he didn't settle. We didn't have a great first season. But I think from a player like that, I think that's, that is the right sort of figure. I think he can score more goals than that. I really do. I think he's got the potential. He's such a good finisher. I mean, I suppose the only slight sort of fly in the ointment is that's been Saka's position for the majority of the season, but Saka's pretty good off the left as well.
I don't necessarily see that as Saka's long-term position.
Right. What do you think that will be?
I have a feeling... Right back.
We've seen it tried.
Yeah. Saliba's going out on loan. He's going to be our right-sided centre-half.
We haven't actually got enough right-backs, so we're going to convert him.
I think he's going to be a midfielder. A central midfield player, I think. Mm. But again, you know, that versatility he has, whether that's something that's with him his entire career or whether he, you know, eventually is nailed down into one position, we'll have to just wait and see. But I think that's my gut feeling on that.
But we shouldn't sweat that. I mean, listen, no. you want options. And yeah, as I said, we've been here before with Pepe in the final game of last season. He had a brilliant game.
Yeah, the FA Cup final, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the culmination of a good run of form. I have to say, I think this season, he's been a better. Since sort of the turn of the year, pretty much almost since the Leeds incident, since he kind of came back into the team, he got a couple of games in the Europa League and was clearly very determined to make an impact. Mm. And then as we went on through the season, you just saw his all-round game improve dramatically. I mean, I think he looks stronger. I think he looks better in a kind of shoulder to shoulder. I think his defensive work rate is miles ahead of what it was. And I think crucially, he's getting in the right positions. He's not stuck out there on the touchline. He's closer to the goal.
Would you give any of that credit to the manager in terms of maybe what they've been working on? Because I do think around the box, he is much more decisive.
One of the things I really like about him is how prepared he is to use his right foot at this point, which it certainly felt like in his first year he wasn't doing as frequently. But if you think about some of his good moments this year, I mean, he scored that stunning goal, didn't he, with his right foot where he just rolled it under his studs and then put it in the top corner. He produced a brilliant cross for Lacazette at West Ham off his right foot. He scored a couple of goals, I think, in the last couple of games off his right foot. So I think that's progress. You know, it makes him more unpredictable, makes him more dangerous. I think he does seem more decisive. Do you want to give credit to the manager?
Well, I mean, I just, you know, there's got to be... Is that just Pepe responding and improving? Or is that Pepe being coached? Not necessarily just by the manager, maybe by some of the coaching staff. There was a question from the Discord from CPT Steve who said, do you think Pepe would have reached the level he reached at the end of the season if he played the games Willian played? Or do you think being benched motivated Pepe to improve? Now, I think we made a huge mistake, obviously, in signing Willian. I think that's not something too many people will argue with. I think we made a mistake giving Willian far, far, far too many minutes at the start of the season that could have gone to Pepe. And I wonder, you know, if the contributions he made in the second half of the season, if one or two in that first half of the season, you know, might have left us in a slightly better position this season. But, you know, is there something to the idea that the way he has been used has helped this late season improvement?
Maybe. I think a lot of people feel that the signing of Willian impeded Pepe's progress.
I agree. I'm not arguing against that. I firmly believe that. I think it was a, you know, is a
but
big
you could
mistake.
Frame it as a motivating factor. I don't know if it was. I think Leeds was a bit of a turning point, actually, because I remember talking to you at that time and we thought was coming to a close, Arsenal, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
It was hard to see a future for him. I think he's really applied himself since then. And maybe the coaching has helped. He certainly looks, you know, he's still not a complete player, and I'm not sure he ever will be. But I think his strengths are being emphasised more. I think it's partly coaching, but also partly the coach understanding how to use him. It's really interesting. I mean, he's so deadly that I'm almost having the conversation in my head that we had about Aubameyang so many times this season. You know, when I see him back there helping Callum Chambers out at right back, I'm almost thinking, should he be there? Mm. Can we get him, keep him closer to goal all the time? I mean, Marcelo Bielsa was the guy who bought him and tried to play him as a centre forward. Apparently it was a disaster, but you can kind of see where he was coming from.
Yeah, you can, for sure, because, you know, that left foot is amazing. When he's on, I mean, the finish with his right foot, the touch with his left foot, the finish with his right foot was excellent. But the that goal that he scored in the second half where he just sort of ran and passed it into the back of the net, you know, made it look so simple. And we've talked about that lots of times. So, look, I hope that the way he's finished this season will make him stronger and better for next season as well, and will perhaps elicit the kind of trust in his output that is required, I think, at this point, you know, from the manager. You know, like he has improved his defensive game. There are flaws to him. There are moments where he looks like Bambi on ice, but then there are, you know, I'm not saying that those are goals scored out of nothing, because I think they came from good team play as well.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the more pleasing aspects of yesterday was, you know, how quickly we progressed the ball at times. But even when you work the ball into the kind of areas that are dangerous, you still need players who can produce the finishes and understand how to get the ball into the back of the net. And I think he is clearly one of the best in this team. You know, he's got that individual quality to make those moves productive.
Yeah, and they're not hugely easy chances, you know. No. And I don't think the sort of analytics models rated them as such either. And he took them really well. He's very cool. He's very composed in those situations.
Mm.
You know, I think there's a pretty good case. He's one of the finer finishers in the team. You know, it's not like an Aubameyang situation where he gets three chances and puts one away. Pepe is super clinical in those scenarios.
Mm.
So I'm really excited about that. And I guess one of the things I'm really encouraged by is that Arteta, however, whatever his part has been in this journey of Pepe's, I do think from the things he says publicly, his appreciation of the player is a little bit different at this point. I think he has warmed to him slightly. That's my impression from his sort of press conferences and stuff.
Yeah, well, look, he finished the season very strongly, four goals in two games. Yeah, I mean, anything else from yesterday? Because we've got a load of questions, so we might pour the
the biggest part. I do have one thing.
Yeah.
Which is, I wanted to ask you, because it was a good day. You know, we won, fans were back, great, but it was also a slightly frustrating day because of, you know, everything that had gone before and the fact that it sort of impeded what we could achieve. But one of the things I found galling and frustrating, and I'm sure it would have been the same for you, is how much better we looked with what I would call a proper central midfield. And did it make you slightly mournful for the fact that we could have selected that midfield at certain other crucial points in the season and didn't?
Yeah, I talked about this. We did a podcast on Patreon, the preview podcast for the Brighton game, myself and Lewis, and we picked three positives of the season and three negatives of the season each.
Right.
And my big, I think my first one was the decision that Mikel Arteta made to play Granit Xhaka at left back when Kieran Tierney got injured, because it affected our central midfield. I thought Xhaka was really good against Brighton, and I know it's an end-of-season game, but I think he has been, his couple of moments aside, and they were big moments and they were costly moments in both those Burnley games. So I'm not trying to wipe the slate clean there, because I think on both occasions, you know,
I mean, that's five of your 6 points, potentially.
At least, yeah, because, you know, we were on top in that home game. We were on top, and it looked like we were starting to play, and then he reacted stupidly, and then there was the one away from home where, you know, so I'm not wiping those away. But I do think, I firmly think, that the biggest mistake this season was Willian.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that happened over 38 games, where it was obvious pretty quickly that it wasn't working out as well as anyone would have hoped. But I think that was the biggest mistake. But I think the biggest tactical mistake was Xhaka at left back, when we had Saka, who could have been more or less what Kieran Tierney was. Xhaka could have partnered Partey, and I think central midfield, you know, we just had to move too much around to try and make the Xhaka left back thing work. And I think that was there are a lot of things I hope Mikel Arteta learns from this season. But I hope that is one that he really sits down and thinks about, and you know, sometimes it can seem like a great idea. I'm sure he did the flow charts and the whiteboards and all the little roundy pieces, and this is how this is going to work and this is how that's going to work. But, you know, you just disrupted too much for it to be effective. And it cost us a place in the Europa League final, I think. So, yeah. Yeah, that was a little bit frustrating for me, but I guess it's water under the bridge at this point.
Yeah, and I thought Xhaka and Partey were both good in this game. And I thought Xhaka was...
Can we talk about how the return of fans has a direct correlation with the quality of Thomas Partey's shooting?
He'd been doing it on purpose, Andrew. He'd been waiting to score his goal in front of supporters. Came very close,
didn't he?
But yeah, I loved the way Xhaka moved the ball. I thought there were some brilliant tackles as well, particularly in the build-up to Pepe's second goal. Really good tackle.
It was one of those where he was going across and I was going, Granite, do you know that John Moss is the referee today? If you do not get this completely right, and even if you get it very slightly wrong, there's a chance you could be done and dusted. But look, commitment in the tackle. We won the ball, we moved it forward, and Pepe scored the goal. So fair play, you know.
Yeah, he was having the sort of day where things were going for him. I just thought it was interesting to see how much better we looked with a properly functioning central midfield. I tell you one other thing that I thought on the day, which I think is worth discussion. I'm fascinated by the David Luiz outpouring. I really am. I think it's unusual. It is unusual, isn't it? To see a player after only 2 years with a club sort of depart so beloved. Yeah. And maybe the disparity that may exist in the sort of degree of love that's there from the players and staff and the club more generally versus that from the fans.
It is weird. I mean, yeah, Serge, who's at Serge Designs, said, isn't this David Luiz send-off a bit much? Lol. And Bearded Genius, or no, Bearded Hannon, at Beardy McBeardface says, when is David Luiz's statue unveiling?
yeah.
I mean...
The testimonial. We need a testimonial.
You're right. I mean, he must be lovely. He must be the loveliest man to have that kind of an impact on a squad of players who genuinely... you know, seemed to want to show their love and appreciation for him. He must be just a really, really nice man and a good teammate to work with on a daily basis. I saw loads of Instagram messages from some of the young players who were thanking him, and, you know, he must have given them time and helped them and all that kind of stuff. But, like, I mean, it doesn't tally with what we got from David Luiz as a player.
No, I mean, yeah, that's it. And I think I suppose one of the reasons it stands out is a lot of the time players don't know they're going. You know, it's the final day, their future's in doubt, maybe they're in contract negotiations, they sort of do the awkward walk around. Is that a goodbye? Is it not?
Yeah.
But Louise...
I want to leave, I don't know if anyone's going to buy me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Louise is in a sort of, I guess, a fortunate position of he's kind of, he and the club have taken the matter into their own hands and actually come out publicly and said, this is going to be it, he's going to leave the club. I mean, Arsenal don't do that particularly often. And it's just given him this opportunity for this farewell. I mean, I watched his speech in the dressing room and, you know, that was an emotional moment for him and for some of the other players. I think often when the club kind of lay on a farewell, they're doing it to reflect the fans' attachment to a player. And the reason this feels different is because, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but it's about the way the club themselves, the staff, the players, the backroom people, it's all about how they feel about David Luiz. Mm. Because ultimately, he's their colleague and he's been a great colleague and clearly they love him. But yeah, it's... I can't remember anything quite like it, to be honest with you.
And it's weird, and I know the circumstances of the departure were very different, you know, but you think about someone like Lauren Koscielny, who put his body on the line for 9 years for the club and got to the point where, completely out of character, he went on strike to leave. And, there's a story there, I'm sure, that will come out in the wash when Koscielny does a book or whatever it might be. We might find out what's going there, what happened there, you know? So it's not to defend what he did, but, you know, there's a guy who played for us for 9 years, season after season, gave us good performances. David Luiz has come in for a season, then there was a stop, and then there was that like crazy stuff where he went on TV. Remember after he got sent off against Man City and he was like, it's my contract. I don't know. Crazy, absolutely crazy stuff. And gave away all those penalties and got sent off all those times. And with David Luiz and the team, yes, we won the FA Cup, but we finished eighth in two seasons in a row. And he's been decent. And his passing is good and everything else, but like, it's so incongruous for that level. It's like he's been here his whole life. And I don't know.
It is because it's not an unmarked copybook, is it, from Louise? You know, there's plenty of sort of black marks there.
He spent most of his career at Chelsea as well, you know?
Yeah. But I think it's an insight, and maybe it's related to the fact that so much of his time at Arsenal has been without supporters. I mean, ultimately, it's the majority of it. And so maybe in that period, the club has been more about, you know, it's been more inward looking. Mm. You know, it's been about the internal relationships. And I don't knock that. You know, this is a place of work for these people. And you know, to have people there who make every day better is good. And it's fair enough that they should celebrate it. It just feels a little odd to us because it's not something we've been able to always see. You know, we might see little clips in training, or we might see him put his arm around somebody at full time, or we might see a thing on social media saying, thank you, David, for giving me advice. But really, his contribution is something that's happened. The big, big positives of it have been behind closed doors.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is a bit weird. It is a bit weird. But there you go. Like I said, he must be just a really lovely man. And it, like, quite a few people are leaving the club at the end of the season as well. David Miles, club secretary, after 50 years.
Exactly 50 years, yeah. He started working in the club shop. It's quite an amazing story.
Yeah, and Chris Harris, who, you know, was in charge of Arsenal.com and the media side of things, he's leaving as well. Connor Armstrong, who's the social media guy. The guy gets all the flack in the mentions every time Arsenal posts something, but those guys are leaving.
I don't blame him. I hope he's going somewhere really nice and relaxing. He can chill out. But his work's been brilliant. I mean, you know, he's a great admin.
Well, look, good luck to all of those guys. Yeah, they're all going off into the sunset in a car with David Luiz. Going to have a caipirinha on the beach somewhere, I'm sure.
Right, let's do part two and get into these questions.
Let's do it. All right.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer questions that you send to us on Twitter at Gunnarblog and at Arsblog, and also on the Arsblog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an Arsblog member on Patreon. Before we get into this, I know this is something we would do at the end of the show, but I do want to say thank you to everyone for being here throughout this season. We know it hasn't been the easiest season to live through, to endure, to experience, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, We've been helped through it ourselves by doing these things. And in part, if it's helped you get through it, we're really happy about that too. So before we get right to the very end where people might turn off, thank you so much for all the listens and downloads and everything else.
Yeah, it has been a great comfort, you know. And obviously you and I have these chats, but it does feel like we're having them with a much bigger audience than that. And
true.
It's especially, I think, you know, without having fans in the stadium and not having that kind of instant camaraderie that I'm used to, it's been brilliant to have this as kind of an outlet. So thanks for sticking with us, because it hasn't been easy on the football front or the non-football front.
No. So. Can we just talk as well very quickly about the Arsblog Patreon Fantasy Football League, in which I finished bottom of the table on minus 17 points, 1,289th. In your face. You finished 174th.
Out of how many?
1,289.
Well, that's not too bad, actually.
Did you keep it up?
I try. I take a tablet for that. But I...
Pfizer,
what was your team? Can we see your team?
Let me see. What I would do is I would just get the most injured players I could find.
Yeah, sure.
So
you, Mesut Ozil, used to work for Arsenal's recruitment department, by the way.
Mesut Ozil was in my team from like, whatever, August to January, because he couldn't score me any points. It was that kind of thing. So my final lineup was Darlow, Kelleher were my goalkeepers. Justin, Van Dijk, Shar, Robinson, Cresswell, Neto, Declan Rice, oh, he came back, Oriol Romeo, MacArthur, Solly March, somebody called Andone, I think he's from Brighton as well, Origi, and Sharp.
Wow. I mean, you actually had a few players scoring points in that last week. Shah scored a penalty, didn't he? Cresswell got a clean sheet. Rice scored, I think, on the last day. So, yeah, you know,
I could have been much worse.
Those guys really let you down.
Fucking point scoring bastards.
I hope they were in your Brendan Rodgers envelope. Disappoint you at the end of the season.
There's going to be three at the end of the season. There's going to be three of you are going to let me down. I know who you are. And
does Brendan have his own name in the envelope? I do wonder about that.
Yeah.
That was a very good Brendan Rodgers, by the way.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to trample on it.
No, that's okay.
It's very good.
It's okay. James, it's fine. It's fine.
It's quite creepy, though.
It is a bit. I can see you now. I know what you're wearing.
Hey! Listen, let's talk about Joe Willock. Have you got a Joe Willock question?
Oh, I do. I do have a Joe Willock question. It's from the Discord, and it comes from Ian2Noobs, or Ianto2Noobs, I don't know. I can't quite figure it out. Anyway, he says, goodly end to the season, a goodly end to the season to you two. He said, do you now think it's time to bring Willock back into the fold and figure out a tactic to get the best out of him and the other Hale End boys? He's been brilliant for the Magpies, and I feel there's no one in the squad with his Ramsey-esque ability to get into the box late and on the end of a pullback.
Mm.
What do you think?
I think he should be knighted, frankly. Sir Joseph Willock. He has done extraordinarily well.
He has.
I'm so pleased for him. He must feel on top of the world because...
He's a lovely lad, isn't he?
Yeah, he does seem like a nice kid. I think when he was growing up as a teenager in the academy, there was a few whispers around that he was maybe a bit big for his boots, but he seems to have really matured and applied himself.
Mm.
And I think... Yeah, he's done incredible. 7 goals in 7 games. I mean, here's the thing. Obviously, that's a freak run, okay? But you can't fluke it, in my opinion. Like, if you score 7 goals in 7 games, you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, his underlying metrics, I was chatting to Tom Werville of The Athletic about this, are really good in terms of like the amount of touches he gets in the box, his expected goals, you know, the positions he takes up. This isn't fluke. He is a goal scorer. He has that knack. Obviously, he's not going to score in every game,
mm-hmm.
but he's definitely the kind of guy who could score 1 in 4, you know, and for a midfielder, that's plenty.
Do you think if Joe Willock grew up on Tyneside and was banging in those goals as a Geordie lad, that people will be saying, that's exactly the kind of player we need at Arsenal. A goal-scoring central midfield player, someone who carries the ball, he progresses it up the field quickly, you know, he drives at defenders, he can burst through the lines, he can finish, he's not the cleanest player, you know, but he's pretty much the kind of player that, you know, people sit up and take notice about.
I think I know exactly what you mean, and I'm sure some people would say that. I think there would still be others who would have stylistic concerns. You know, he's not exactly Martin Odegaard in terms of his passing and his ability to, you know, control the ball. But I think that this debate about system and, like, does he fit is a little bit of a red herring, because I think Joe Willock is not a guy you want to fit into your system. Like, he's kind of a guy you want to be able to deploy or to bring on almost to disrupt things. Like, for me, the optimum use of Joe Willock for Arsenal is like, and this sounds disparaging and it honestly isn't meant to, but is that kind of Danny Welbeck, at times Yaya Sanogo, that X factor of like, I don't know exactly how this guy's going to play. I don't know the positions he's going to take up. Mm. He's not going to help us from a continuity perspective, but he's going to add athleticism. And more so than either of those players who I've just mentioned, he's going to add goal threat. And that is his use for me. Like, I don't think we start... I don't envisage Thomas Partey playing next to Joe Willock, you know, week in, week out for Arsenal. Like, personally, I don't see it.
Mm.
But I do see a player who could be very useful in situations where you're playing Burnley and they're sat in and you need someone who can make a run, you know, into the box, get on the end of something. He scored a few headers for Newcastle.
He scored a few headers for us as well.
Yeah. You know, for me, he's a wild card. So it doesn't matter that he's doesn't fit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I absolutely see what you mean there.
You don't have to agree with it.
No, it's not that I disagree with it. I just wonder if a manager who is as wedded to structure as Mikel Arteta appears to be would have a place for a player like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So is there an incompatibility there? Personally, if it were me, unless the offer was absolutely ridiculous, I think I would... I mean, I see both sides of this where people will say his stock will never be higher. We should cash in now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, his stock...
I see it.
Stock could be higher if he scores more goals. I wonder how much would his stock fall? Yeah, it's a
Depends.
Weird one.
I mean, think about Ainsley Maitland-Niles, you know. Mm. Slightly different situation, but a year ago had that good run with us, played and won the FA Cup final.
Got into the England team.
Got into the England squad. 15 million on the table. We were right at that point in time. It didn't feel enough. But his value since then has dropped. Whether it's dropped below 15 million, hard to say. And his contractual situation is probably a factor in that if it has.
Mm.
But, you know, at the time we were like, no, this is a £30 million player sort of thing. And now that feels wrong. You know?
Yeah, I really can see both sides of it. I personally would like to see him get a chance with us. I do think there is a player in there. I think, you know, he's flourished at Newcastle. The goal-scoring run might be a bit of a freak, but it's no surprise to me that he scores goals. It shouldn't be any surprise to anyone who's watched him for Arsenal. You know, he scores goals. We do not have midfielders who can score goals.
No.
You know, Partey didn't score this season. Ceballos didn't score this season in the Premier League. Xhaka, did he get one goal? I think he got that free kick against Chelsea. Elneny only scores belters in the Europa League. We're not even in the Europa League. So we don't have goals from central midfield. Is that something that we are going to be targeting when we think about the transfer market this summer? Don't know. So I would be inclined to hang on to him personally. Mm. But if the offer came in and the offer was too good to turn down, and I think that's an interesting one because I think pretty much every club everywhere is going to be open to selling players of Willock's type or stature. Like, I think most clubs will have a few players who are basically untouchable, but everybody else, because of the financial impact of COVID, is potentially sellable.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because you have to try and generate some money. So I think there could be like a circular, you know, whirlwind of money going around the Premier League and maybe beyond that. Players who maybe a club wouldn't want to sell ordinarily, but because of the market, they may have to. And I think Willock is in that category, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So...
And we, you know, equally, we need homegrown players. He's one of those.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't lie. I can't be truly objective about this because it's a player I like and I love it when academy players get, you know, their chance in the first team. And this story of a guy who's gone away on loan, surpassed expectations, performed brilliantly, you know, emotionally, I'd love him to get that chance back at Arsenal. And I think he couldn't have done more
exactly,
to earn it.
Exactly. There's a head versus heart thing going on.
Yeah.
You know?
But what I'm saying is if I'm not paid to make those decisions. And if someone within the club made the decision to sell him, I would respect it as well. And in a way, I would think maybe Arsenal have changed tack a little bit in how they manage these things, and that wouldn't be the worst thing. Mm. You know, I don't doubt he could have a role to play in the Arsenal squad. But it's like you say, maybe he's not really an Arteta player. Mm. That said, Arteta picked him, you know, he brought him on at least plenty of times. Last season. It's a really interesting one.
Yeah, maybe to add that chaos factor. Maybe it is something that he would like to have in the squad, because we don't have another player like that.
Well, I mean, he's not the same, but I think Martinelli brings some of that.
Yeah, that's
fair. And it's interesting, sometimes Arteta's a little reticent to use that as well. So I guess we'll find out quite what Arteta's stand on it is. But yeah. Goals from midfield are in short supply, and certainly Joe Willock appears someone who's going to offer you that. He's in a difficult position in his career where I think he's a little bit like someone, again, this is not a kind comparison, forgive me, Joe, but someone a little bit like Jesse Lingard, who it's like, you can play in the United team and you'll score goals here and there and be useful, or you can be the star at West Ham or Newcastle, say. And I don't know, he put a thing up on his Instagram today, Willock, didn't he? Kind of saying his goodbyes to Newcastle. I don't know. I wonder how he feels as well. It's a tricky one.
It is because, you know, the purpose of the loan was to see what he could do. He's shown very clearly what he can do. You know, it's not that he's going to come back and score with that kind of frequency, but I think he's given them plenty to think about this summer, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. On the subject of this, you know, you were talking about big regrets from the season.
Mm.
I've got one for that list.
Okay.
And it's something I've been thinking about since Joe Willock's loan spell has seen him kind of explode in this fashion. I think the failure to loan out Reece Nelson and Eddie Nketiah, I think that was a real, real mistake in January. I think Arsenal should have moved heaven and high water to try and do that. Because I'm not saying they would have done what Joe's done, but if you look at how his value has been amplified and how the value of those players has sort of slightly tailed off, it just seems such a shame, such a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, the Nelson one is weird. I think it's very strange. The Nketiah one, I don't really... Look, he was playing, not frequently, but he played enough in the first half of the season where you... he was involved.
When Aubameyang was on the left, he got minutes, yeah.
Yeah.
And we had Europa League group stage.
But Nelson really hasn't been involved at all. And I know people will say, it's ridiculous we gave all those minutes to Willian when we could have given them to Reece Nelson. But realistically, if we weren't giving the minutes to Willian, we should have given them to Pepe, not Reece Nelson. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't quite stack up in that sense. I wonder why a January loan didn't happen, because it was clear at that point that if he wanted to play with any regularity or any frequency this season, he would have to go. So I don't know why he didn't push for that to happen himself, because essentially it's a wasted season for him.
Yeah, I don't get it either, and I don't know the answer. And I have tried to find out. It's a very strange one. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, we had more to gain from those guys. The Nketiah one, I take your point, but I think once we got out of the group stage of Europa League...
But there was no reason to keep him in January again.
No. And we had Balogun, you know?
Yeah.
So I think who'd shown that he could score, you know, for us in a couple of Europa games. I think in January we should have got those guys out on loan. The worst case scenario, Well, I think even a few games in the Premier League would have improved their value if they contribute anything positive. You know, and it doesn't mean you have to sell them. I think we probably would have sold those players, but maybe you get more for them. Or if Reece Nelson sets the world alight at Crystal Palace, maybe you bring him back, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
As it is, we just don't really know. We don't know enough.
I think we must now know enough.
Surely, well, we do about Nketiah, I think.
Yeah, I think we do about Nketiah, but I think we also know enough about certainly where Reece Nelson is in the pecking order.
Yeah, yeah.
To know what should happen this summer.
Yeah, yeah. This is a question.
Okay.
Matt Arsenal. As a club that has criminally underperformed in Europe throughout our history, should we have been so quick to dismiss the Conference League? It seems reminiscent of those that dismissed the League Cup for years.
Like, can you be a snob about the Europa Conference League when you don't even finish in a place high enough to qualify for? You know, I think it's a slightly different thing. I think my objection to it was that I see next season's Premier League as the thing we absolutely have to focus on. I really didn't see enough in terms of benefits from that competition to make up for all the distraction that it causes in terms of pregame preparation. You know, we don't have, like, look what's, I've got another question about this now in a minute, but look at what has happened at under 23 level this season. We do not have the strength of young players coming through the academy to make it an all under 23s tournament. If that's the way, you know, that was one of the things that you could say, that would be a positive, right? We can just give the games to the under 23s, keep the main guys fresh for the weekends, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't think we have that depth there. I just think that it allows us to properly take stock, to reset this summer, to rebuild properly, to fashion that tighter, more compact squad, and to focus completely on the Premier League, because that is where we need to improve.
Yeah, I kind of feel a bit conflicted about this, because I wouldn't have hated that much, really, to be in the Conference League. Ultimately, you know, I enjoy getting an opportunity to see the squad players, the younger players at times. I like the platform that can provide them. And I quite like watching us win. You know, like, I'd rather watch us stick four past Dundalk sometimes than some of the other dross we've served up in the Premier League. Well, maybe it shouldn't be that way, but that's how it's felt. That said, now that we're not in it, and assuming that the financial consequences of that are not particularly crippling, which I think in the kind of broader context of the pandemic, they aren't, you know, they're sort of a relatively low proportion of the losses that we've suffered. I can see the benefit of being out of it for our Premier League chances.
Yeah.
And we've seen our rivals benefit from that in the past.
That is true. And that's the kind of silver lining that you have to hang on to justify in your own head a season outside of Europe. I realize that there are some mental gymnastics going on there. I do. And the other like part of it is that we have less football next season, fewer Arsenal games.
And that's
more time between fixtures and things like that. And like, even if 20,000 people turn up to see one of these Europa Conference games against a team we've never heard of, it's still revenue for the club as well. So,
of course,
from that perspective, I do see it. But the advantage, if we can make it work for us, is fresher and, you know, just not having all those distractions. I mean, just following up on this, let me see if I can find it here.
I'm just hoping personally we can finally really push on for that Carabao. Sweet Carabao.
Sweet Carabao goodness. Tater Murray on the Discord says, Which statement is true? Increased time on the training ground will allow Arteta to drill in automatisms and weekly game plans. 2. Increased time on the training ground will allow Arteta more time to come up with complex and convoluted game plans to outsmart himself.
Ooh, good question. I think, from what I know, actually, of Mikel Arteta's training methods, he is quite good at not... Although we may see, you know, these players look too constricted, the plans are too tight, the length of time is not something that dramatically alters his approach. He's very much focused on the 48 hours before a game. You know, if he can, he'll give players days off in the period before that, or he'll go for something lighter. He'll respect the wishes of the physios. For him, it's all about that sort of T-minus 48. What do we do in that period? So I'm optimistic that he won't kind of seek to, as someone once described Unai Emery's methods to me, cram for an exam. Just use all available time to fill the players' heads with information. Because that would be bad. What I do think, thinking about this, is that if you only really got the Premier League, and I made that joke about the League Cup, by the way, but I'd absolutely take a League Cup if there was one on offer. But if the focus is so clearly on the Premier League, that does bring pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a pressure that won't be alleviated on a kind of fortnightly basis by trouncing opposition from a substantially inferior league.
But was it alleviated this year when we won all our games in the Europa League group stage? I don't know that it was, particularly in
November, December. But imagine how it would have felt without that.
Yeah, you've got more time to stew.
Yeah, and I do. And also, just there is an inherent pressure in, well, Arsenal have got an advantage over their opponents. They don't have European fixtures to contend with.
Mm.
So
no hiding place.
There is really no hiding place. And we've got a good platform to perform in the Premier League, but it's so incumbent on the manager to ensure that they do so.
Okay.
What about... I've got a question that I think maybe you were going to ask, but I'll ask. Dom Crofts.
That's the very one. How did you know that? Yeah. I literally have it open here right in front of me.
It's a good question.
It is a good question, but how did you know this was the next one?
We've been doing this a long time, Andrew. We've been doing this a long time. Steve Bould is a club legend, but should his dismissal be viewed as a positive? Our sentimentality and loyalty off the pitch has come at a cost in the past. So is this newfound ruthlessness a step in the right direction? Underperformance equals failure.
Like, I don't really have any issue with a change being made at under 23 coaching level if that's what they think is the right thing to do. I think Steve Bould has had... he hasn't had a great deal to work with this season, in that the best young players are either with the first team, and the ones who aren't quite at that level but still a step above the ones that he's had to work with are out on loan. And we did this weird thing last summer where we just sort of... did you ever do this in Football Manager or Championship Manager? Just randomly buy a load of young players and hope that, like, in 2 years or two seasons' time, their stats have gone through the roof. It feels a bit like we did that. We signed players who weren't good enough for other clubs. There were players who were let go by Tottenham, players let go by Huddersfield. There was the young Norwegian guy, George Lewis, who was let go by whatever club it was, and they basically said, really, Arsenal are going to buy him or bring him in? You know, so I feel like some of the criticism of the season that the under-23s have had that's been placed on Steve Bould lacks the context of that, right?
Well, certainly Steve Bould is not leading that recruitment.
Mm-mm.
And the other thing to say about it is I think... we have to try to contextualise what the under-23s
Yeah,
it's for
exactly,
you know, it's for the results even matter.
Yeah, it's for developing players and playing styles and.
Yeah, and there have been some question marks over his style, in fairness. And, you know, George Bird, I think, is very fair in his analysis of the 23s.
Yeah.
And he kind of said, look, probably time for a change.
Yeah.
But it is useful context to talk about what's happened to the 23s, because on the one hand, they have lost a lot of the players who you would expect to be competing in that age group. Some of them are with the first team. You know, we're watching them every week, Saka and Smith Rowe and Martinelli and what have you. Also, a number of very good under 23 players have gone out on loan. I'm thinking of people like, I don't know, Tyrese John-Jules or Daniel Ballard, who I think's done pretty well.
Mark McGuinness.
Matt Smith.
Ben Sheaf.
Matt Smith had a very good loan.
You know, Zach Medley.
These are the stronger players
in
that group. And actually, that's, I think, smart. Like, get those guys out where they're playing proper senior men's football.
Yeah.
And it has meant a bit of a scrabble to fill the squad with, like you say, a bit of a ragtag bunch. But that none of that's on Steve Bould, especially.
No. And look, I think the issue really is that, you know, again, let's bring it back to David Luiz, who's leaving with a hero's departure.
Well, exactly.
You know, I think this is a situation that perhaps the club could have managed better, given Steve Bould's sterling service to us as a player, as a coach. You know, let's not forget that he won the FA Youth Cup as a youth coach, you know, before he became Arsene Wenger's assistant manager. He was keen to allow Freddie Ljungberg to work with the first team and was happy to step down to work with the young players because that's where he felt more comfortable, even though many people would have seen that as a demotion, which maybe it was. You know, so I just wish that for a guy who is such a legend and a really underrated part of the history of this club, because everyone, when they think about Arsenal defenders, they think about Tony Adams and they think about Martin Keown because of the way that he played and the kind of character that he was. Steve Bould was a fucking brilliant player, a brilliant defender, really, really underrated, I think, as part of, you know, one of the legendary back four, et cetera, et cetera. Anfield 89, you know, winning the league in 91, the Cup Winners' Cup, all of that. You know, I just feel like he should, even if the decision was to sack him, and that's what happens if you've got time left on your contract and a club wants to make a change, you get sacked. That's the harsh reality of football. I don't think Steve Bould would be complaining about that. I just wish that the club had managed that situation better than they did. And he was, you know, and he might well still be given a good send-off and the right amount of appreciation for his time at the club. But, you know, for the story to come out that way, when I'm sure that the club had ample opportunity to get out in front of it if they'd wanted to but didn't, I think that's wrong, and I'm sorry that it happened that way. I didn't like that.
It's tricky because, you know, I feel a slight sense of culpability in that because obviously we put the story out via The Athletic, and in fairness to the club, that would not have been their ideal or their intention, you know?
Yeah, but a story is a story. The truth is the truth. The fact is the fact. That it's reported on isn't the issue. It's, I think, the fact that it was reported on first before the club, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the way it was explained to me, like, I don't understand this because I haven't had many proper jobs in my life, but, you know, HR processing basically meant that this thing, the club weren't in a position to say what they would like to say. Now, if you know you're going to do something, I would say, you know, the club was able to give a really good farewell to David Miles, for example. They were able to give a really good farewell to David Luiz. It would have been better had everything not been had everything been sorted early enough that Steve Bould could have got an ovation from the fans on the final day of the season, which is the very, very least he deserved.
Exactly.
But, you know, it's a tricky one because, you know, it's not, well, it's a tricky one for me because we put the story out. But yeah, I always feel slightly bad in those situations, but it's a job.
All right, I've got a question. Matthew McGuinness, who's not on loan at Ipswich, he says, discuss your end of season awards. Player of the season, young player of the season, most improved player, goal of the season, moment of the season, best game of the season, surprise of the season, flop of the season. Who's your player of the season?
I'm going to say Saka.
Yes, I too.
Yeah, I think Saka. Yeah. I think he's had ups and downs, but I think generally his contribution and what he's done at his age, he's got to be Saka.
Young player of the season, I'm going to go for Emile Smith Rowe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Saka would qualify for both, but nice to spread the love a bit. Yeah. And I do think the trajectory of Smith Rowe, kind of since he came into the team, is pretty extraordinary. He's made such a big impact on the results as well.
Most improved player.
There's a few for this, I think.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I've got three in mind straight away.
Okay.
I'll tell you who my three are.
Okay.
My three are... I've forgotten one. Who was my third? One was Granit Xhaka, who I think in the course of the season has improved, but I think looks a better player. I think Nicola Pepe. Is another one. And the third, I thought it was going to be Rob Holding, actually, simply because it felt like his Arsenal career was in a bit of trouble when he was sort of headed out on loan to Newcastle. The amount of games he's played and the relative consistency at which he's done that, I think is quite impressive. So they're who I've got in my mix. Who do you think?
Kind of struggling.
Mm-hmm. Not convinced by any of those.
I think Pepe, I see your point about Xhaka, but I don't necessarily agree in that. I think he's been pretty good. But I think what we're just seeing is, you know, when Granit Xhaka has been good, we're seeing that rather than massive improvement. Maybe the consistency is the improvement.
Yeah, I mean, he was pretty good at times last season too, so... He's been pretty good since Arteta came in.
I'm taking the fifth on this one.
Okay, yeah. I am actually going to go for Rob Holding just because I didn't see this coming. I did not see it coming.
Okay,
that he would play this much.
Goal of the season.
That I'm finding hard, actually.
There's a couple that spring to mind. You mentioned one earlier was Pepe's goal in the Europa League with his right foot.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
It was beautiful. I also have a very strong liking for another Pepe goal. Was it against Wolves where he did the nutmeg?
The double nutmeg,
yeah. I like that one. But I think my goal of the season is Saka against West Brom.
Yeah.
Just because of it was so at odds with what we'd seen from Arsenal in the previous couple of months, the kind of football that we forgot we could play. And it was a really nice move, and Smith Rowe's touch and pass, and, you know, it's a simple enough finish. But I just think the move, the football that we created, that for me is the one that sticks out, I think.
Yeah. I think you're right. It was a sort of transformative moment, wasn't it, in terms of you know, what we felt was possible from this group of players. So there's a heavy symbolism to that. So yeah, I think that's fair enough.
I also like Tierney against West Brom as well.
Oh, great goal.
Yeah.
Same game.
Same game. So,
Was there another category?
Moment of the season. Is there a moment that sticks out?
I mean, the occasions, the couple of occasions when we got fans back were both great for different reasons. I was at the first one, the Europa League one, and the final day felt like football. So I think I'd go for that probably. What about you?
Team selection against Chelsea on the 26th of December with Smith Rowe, with Saka, with Martinelli. So, yeah, it just signaled something was changing. Best game of the season? It's hard to think of any of the European ones because the group stages didn't matter, and ultimately the campaign fell short in Europe. So it's hard to look on even something like the comeback against Benfica with any great fondness.
Yeah, I mean the Chelsea game was a game changer in some respects, but in terms of the I mean, our best performances have come against Chelsea, West Brom. That was a good performance. The Derby win was quite enjoyable.
It was.
The West Ham comeback in its own way was enjoyable, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the battering we gave Slavia Prague. I think I'm going to go for Chelsea. I think I'm going to choose that. The 3-1.
3-1 at home, yeah. That's a good one. I think the win at Old Trafford was a good one as well.
Even
if it was just a 1-0 and we did need a penalty. Okay, surprise of the season.
Maybe I should have put Rob Holding in this one. Surprise of the season.
Callum Chambers?
Yeah,
not that he's like,
ways.
Not that like he's a big surprise, not someone we didn't know about, but the fact that he basically ended the season as first choice right back, that's a surprise. Good surprise, bad surprise, I don't know. Still a surprise.
Yeah, surprise of the season. Callum Chambers, I think so. I think I've got another question about him, so maybe we'll come on to that. I think. Do you know what? I think. How disappointing Aubameyang has been is a genuine surprise to me.
That's fair as well.
You know, because I think even if you disagreed with the contract decision, you were more worried about year three than year one. I think we all thought this year we'll be onto a good thing with him. And he felt like the bankable thing in this squad. And he's not been... You know, I'm not trying to drag him here, or you know, I'm not trying to go, but he's just fallen well short of what I would have expected.
Yeah.
So that's been an unpleasant surprise. I'll just say that.
Okay, final one, flop of the season. Do we even need to answer that?
No. Ultimately, Renarsson just didn't perform, did he? So. it's Willian, undoubtedly. I mean, an extraordinarily bad signing. And a lot of people thought it was a bad signing at the time, but even those people probably thought the first year, a bit like Aubameyang, would be better than this. There's been almost nothing positive to be taken from it. Big mistake.
Yeah. No arguing with that one. Flop of the season. Okay. Have you got one? I've got a quick one here, if you want.
Yeah, go on.
It comes from the Discord, and it comes from Super White Pill. Took a few of those in my day. He said, I've got a question. What number should Emile Smith Rowe get next season?
Yeah. Number 8, I think.
Yes.
I like it for me. I know who's number. Have we got number 10? No, we don't have a number 10. Am I right about that? Was it Ozil when he went?
It was, yeah.
Right, okay. And Odegaard took 11.
He wants 10, but I think 8 might. Yeah, James Benj was on last week talking about how he, you know, not that he's sort of clamoring for it or doing a campaign or anything, but he would like 10, I think.
Well,
is there pressure? Pressure with that number? Like, can a number on a shirt bring pressure that a young player doesn't need? Is that a thing? Is that
I don't know. I mean, Bukayo Saka doesn't seem too bothered by the number 7. But I just, there's something that feels right to me about number 8 for Smith Rowe. I can't explain it. Maybe it's, you know, it's been a great number for Arsenal. Danny Ceballos posted his farewell today, didn't he, on Instagram? I think
we've
known for a while he will be back. But, you know, Ian Wright, Freddie Ljungberg,
Aaron Ramsey,
certain Mikel Arteta.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's something that just fits about Smith Rowe for me there. I think it would really suit him, and it's a real fan favourite number. Listen, so is 10, but I just think there's going to be a lot of competition from senior players for that. If Martin Odegaard comes back, it wouldn't surprise me if he made the old switch 11 to 10. It's weird, you know, that's a pattern at Arsenal.
The 11 to 10.
11 to 10. Ozil went 11 to 10. I think 8, but I won't. I'll be delighted for him if he gets 10.
Yeah, just not 30, whatever he is at the moment. 2?
Yeah, 32, yeah. This was a question about Chambers. John Stones, would you offer contract extensions to Elneny and Chambers? Both have played their part in some big performances this season and both seem good, solid pros that make good squad players while we rebuild. However, we also know how bad they can be.
I would be tempted by Chambers, and I'll explain to you why.
Handsome. He's a handsome,
handsome
man.
Young man.
Yeah.
Very handsome young man. Like, right? but here's what I would do. If this is my ideal situation or scenario, right?
Yeah.
You get rid of Cedric.
Throw him in the sea.
Don't mind. But ideally, you could sell him for a few quid. Like computer intelligent automated response on Twitter, who is at doing petty crime. I like that. Anyway, he says, if Willian and Cedric potentially leave this year, could whatever fee we get for them be considered good business considering we got them for free? Obviously, the cost of playing Willian this season was immensely bad, but, you know, if we get a fee, is that good? So, look, I would move heaven and earth to shift Willian, and I think most people would. I would also, if possible, shift Cedric because I think it's a bad signing that hasn't really worked out. He can't play at left back. We were told he could, but he's not trusted to. He's third choice right back. Look, it's not working, right? He's not in the manager's trust circle, if you like. So sell him. Keep Chambers. Give him a.
Did you mention Maitland-Niles, by the way?
Well, I think we had this discussion a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
About Maitland-Niles. Like, I think that moment is gone for him for right back.
Someone ring Wolves up and see what.
Yeah.
Have you still got that 15 million quid you mentioned a year ago?
We'll take it. We'll take it. But I think one of the signings we have to make this summer is a right back.
Yeah, I think so too.
And I think Chambers offers you a homegrown, decent backup to the right back and also some cover at centre half as well, if you want it. You know, you're going to have Holding, Marie, Gabriel, William Saliba back, but to what extent he's going to be played, we don't know yet. And you know, four centre halves is probably as much as you need for a 38-game league season when you don't have Europe. But just in case, Chambers gives you that little bit of assurance. So I would be in favor in that situation of giving Chambers an extension.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
Why can't he be the starting right back?
Because
I'm sort of saying it to be provocative, you know, but like, what makes you think no? Because his delivery is very good.
There was one first time cross. Did you notice?
Yeah, and he's done that before, a volleyed cross like that.
Yeah, he's got quality on the ball, Chambers. No question.
Yeah,
I just wonder about. Like, I just think a right back or the starting right back needs to be a slightly different profile of player.
Mm.
I'm not saying a right-sided Tierney, but kind of a right-sided Tierney, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's the signing we need to make.
Mm.
I think that... If everyone's fit, first game of next season, I think Chambers will play right back because I just think it will be that thing of like bedding in a new player. I think it will be more even, the competition between Chambers and the new guy. I think it'll be kind of a horses for courses situation.
Depends what the profile of the new guy is. If he's a young, promising player who could develop, then maybe you balanced the playing time in the first season a bit. But if it's a kind of more high profile, like if, who's the lad at Norwich? Max Aarons.
Yeah.
That's a guy who could come in and start for you, you know?
Yeah, potentially. I think I would give Chambers a new deal. How old is he?
26, I think.
Yeah. They like him. Like... He's so nice.
He's so, so nice.
He's so nice.
We give him a new deal. He's so, so nice.
And Mikael, you've given a contract to Callum Chambers. Why? He's so nice. I would give him a new deal. Elneny.
No.
Goals from midfield, Andrew.
Only in the Europa League.
Hmm.
Or did he score in the Premier League? He did, didn't he? He got one in the Premier League.
He's 28. He's got one more year, I think.
I wouldn't be averse to keeping him, but I wouldn't give him a new deal.
But if you're going to keep him and you can give him a new deal on the same money...
Well, then... Fine.
Mightn't you as well do it and then sell him in a year?
But then are you not in the situation where you've got a player heading towards 30 who's not inclined to leave if he doesn't want to and it becomes more difficult to sell?
Yeah. Yeah.
He scored against Newcastle, you know.
I suppose if... Yeah. I actually think Elneny's a slightly tricky one just because we haven't got any midfielders.
Mm.
And if something happened with Xhaka, we really haven't got any midfielders. And if something happened with
Joe Willock.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to have to bring in a central midfield player.
I think
that's got to be on the list as well.
I think if someone offers you money for Elneny this summer, you've probably got to take it, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, if you've got to give those minutes to Miguel Aziz, that's fine.
Also, I think you have to construct your midfield in a way where in January, 50% of it isn't gone to the African Cup of Nations.
I mean, we're talking about Elneny, Partey, Pepe. I don't think Gabon are going to get there, are they?
I don't know.
With Aubameyang playing like this. I think we're in safe hands there.
Mm.
What did you make of Bissouma?
He likes a tackle, doesn't he?
Mm.
He likes a tackle. Yeah, there's some interesting pictures of Pepe showing him around at the end of the game.
Yeah, I know. Showing him the tunnel area.
Gabon are qualified for the African
Cup. You're joking.
Yeah. So it is a problem, isn't it? Partey, possibly Elneny, Aubameyang and Pepe gone in January for X amount of time. So that's got to be a real consideration when it comes to how we construct our squad for next season. So if you get an offer for Elneny and you can replace him with a a player who's not going to go away on international duty in the middle of the season, that's maybe what you do.
Yeah. And does it affect the conversation Mikel Arteta has with Granit Xhaka? You know, if you're going to lose Partey, potentially Elneny, it may be Bissouma, you never know.
I don't think that Mikel Arteta would want Granit Xhaka to go, but I do wonder if Granit Xhaka feels it might be time for him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my impression. But I think Mikel Arteta will ask him to stay. And then it becomes about, you know, is Xhaka willing to do that again?
But again, it might depend on what kind of options he has.
Yeah. Yeah, true. He's another really interesting one this summer. Because it's another big kind of decision point for the club and for him.
Anyhow.
You got any more?
Lots to think about. Do I have any more?
How you feeling, by the way? Still feeling?
Feel okay. Feel okay. Don't have a sore arm.
Great. Suppose well. I mean, I'll probably. Who knows what will happen to me? Let's not get into it.
No, the possibilities, I think, are endless.
Absolutely endless.
Are endless. Do I have any more? I don't really. There's a lot of stuff about transfers and, you know, if we're going to do our projections on things like that. But I think we probably need to leave that to, a different day. There's plenty of time to talk about all those things. So I think we should leave it there for now. It's late enough anyway. It's now 20 past 10 at night. We've got to get this podcast out for people to listen to. They've been waiting all day for it. Staying up late.
Past their bedtime to listen to this.
Yeah, they'll have to get a nice hot cup of Horlicks or cocoa.
I mean, that's the thing. The season's over, but we're not really going anywhere, are we? So we can talk about all this for many, many months.
Exactly.
Weeks, rather.
Yep. With a proper preseason to come and everything else. And people can just, enjoy the show. Do we need any more creepy Brandon before we go? I don't think we do we?
No, I won't sleep tonight, Andrew. Nor will the listeners.
That's because I'm watching you, James.
No! It's horrid. Absolutely horrid.
All right. Look, James, thank you for your company throughout the season. I know we're going to be here through the summer, but, I think I should...
It's good to thank me, though, every now and then.
It is. It is.
Thank you for having me.
That's my pleasure. My pleasure. I've enjoyed it in as much as it's been possible to enjoy things during this season. It has been a thing to keep me sane and grounded. So thank you, James. Thank you, listeners, for everything. We will have a regular podcast for you on Friday. We'll probably do something midweek as well. But for now, we'll leave it there and we will catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.